Coming up on this week's show, we get a load of retro gaming nostalgia with the guys from Arcade Attack.
Our first look at the TurboGrafx minigames.
And we've finally seen footage of Beyond a Steel Sky. But is it any good?
This week's show is brought to you by The Economist, the smart guide to the forces changing your world.
And Beer 52, the world's most popular craft beer discovery club.
Hello and welcome to the Retro Hour podcast, episode number 188, your weekly dose of retro gaming and technology news with me, Dan Wood.
Me, Ravi Abbott.
And me, Joe Fox.
And welcome along to this week's show. Great to have you joining us again. You know, actually, I was thinking the other day, in one of my kind of down moments when I was just, you know, gaze away and think about what's going on in the world, what a wonderful medium podcasting really is. You think about podcasting, I mean, we started on YouTube originally before we started doing a podcast, didn't we?
Yeah.
And I love YouTube, and obviously it's, you know, the go-to place for a lot of people for retro gaming, but you can take podcasting with you anywhere.
And the great thing about podcasting is I find that it will never change because you can put anything you want on that RSS feed.
Yeah.
You know, there's no kind of censorship over podcasting. It is really true free media.
No one owns it. Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, if you're somewhere where you've maybe got really bad internet, you can still get a podcast on your phone. Doesn't take up much bandwidth. If you're driving, you can't watch YouTube when you're in your car. Well, I mean, you could technically, but not advisable. A podcast you can take anywhere with you. And we get pictures of, I mean, thinking of the places people listen to the retro hour. We've had a couple of pictures of people in front of the Sydney Opera House sending us pictures.
Oh, yeah. But also, a thing that people don't know about us is we're also podcast addicts ourselves.
Yeah.
So we're always listening to every kind of retro gaming podcast out there, and there's tons of them that are really fantastic.
Now this week we're going to be doing our first crossover episode. So we're going to join forces with another very popular British retro gaming podcast. Now these are a group of guys who do a show called Arcade Attack. Going to be joined by Adrian Dill and Rob. These guys have been doing their podcast longer than us, actually, I think. And they've had some incredible guests on too. So if you like our show, you've got to check them out. And I actually binge listened to a load of their episodes when we were over in Norway at Retro Spill Messen. Because we had a bit of time when, you know, you were doing stuff, I was doing stuff in the day, and there was no Uber there, so we had to walk everywhere. And so I was walking for, like, you know, probably about 5-6 hours a day in Norway.
Yeah, yeah.
So in my ears, I listened to a load of their episodes back to back and found them really interesting. And we all, you know, we're all similar age kind of guys on the show, and we all kind of share this collective memory of this incredible age of video games. So it's going to be great to kind of get some of their stories too. So we're going to be joined by, first time we've done this, hooking up with another podcast, the lads from Arcade Attack are going to be joining us on the Retro Hour in around 15 minutes from now. Now, before we get to that, we've got some incredible stories that we're going to talk about, including, this is really interesting, it seems there may be a bit of a retro gaming gold rush on at the moment, with people who you wouldn't expect to be into retro gaming coming into it. So we'll talk more about that in a minute. Now, before we do, let's give a huge thank you to a big supporter of the Retro Hour podcast. And these are our very good friends at The Economist. Now, The Economist helps you get prepared for what is happening in the world around you. And they sift through all that noise that's out there. I mean, you know, we look at it right now, how much false information and stuff that you read about on social media that's just not true. It's more important than ever that you get the real facts about things that are important. And The Economist has been around for 170 years, and they cover so much in there as well. The economy, finance, world politics, business. Technology is obviously more important in the world now than it's ever been. And they cover video games too. Now, every week we have a little look through The Economist, and we find, you know, a lot of stuff in there we find interesting. But you pick something out that you've been reading about this week that you thought was really good.
Yeah, because we like to talk about kind of hacking culture and, you know, subverting things. As you guys have probably all seen on the news with the Hong Kong protests, there's a kind of massive way of hiding yourself at the moment. So there's a lot of facial recognition that's been taken out in the world, and it's actually spreading around the world pretty quickly. Now, you may have noticed those laser pens that everybody's got in the Chinese protests, and they're trying to put them into the cameras to confuse them and subvert them. Well, there's a few methods that have actually been developed that they're talking about in this article, and they're pretty interesting. There's one called CV Dazzle, and that's basically camouflage from face detection, but using hair makeup to create these kind of strange patterns. And what you can do is you can print out one of these hair patterns and then cut it out, gel your hair into that position, and
a QR code,
yeah, and they also know which camera systems it defeats. So a lot of people are using the Israeli camera systems at the moment. Those are the ones used in Britain, and this defeats them. But also there's an artist who's created a thing called Hyperface. Now, Hyperface is a camouflage pattern. I've actually got a T-shirt.
I've seen you wearing
at home, yeah. And it convinces...
Never leave the house without it, Ravi. Yeah.
It convinces all the cameras that you're about 100 people. So they're now developing clothing that's going to have this in. So as this scary facial recognition comes in, also an alternative does.
It's a nightmare to tag Ravi on Facebook, though. All your friends list comes up. But I mean, this is the kind of stuff that's happening in the world around us and the kind of things you can read about in The Economist. And we'd like to give you your own free copy of The Economist. Now, if you live in the UK, you've got to do this right now. Get your phone and text the word retro and send that to 78070. We want to give you your own free print copy of The Economist through your door so you can check it out for yourself. Now, all you have to do is text RETRO and send it to 78070 to get your own free copy of The Economist, the smart guide to the forces changing your world. Now, recently, we've been hyped about all these, you know, mini consoles. Some of them more than others, but I think the one we were talking a couple of weeks ago with Happy Console Gamer, who's our guest, who was a big fan of the TurboGrafx, not a system that we really got much of over here in the UK. And we were all saying that we were actually quite keen to get our hands on the TurboGrafx Mini because it's going to be a library of games that we are probably not too familiar with. But now we finally know what's going to be on there.
Yeah, yet another Gamescom announcement this one is. And this is the TurboGrafx 16 Mini. And they've kind of talked about quite a few titles that are coming. So there's going to be 50 titles coming out for this machine,
right.
But also the price, which is going to be around £100.
Not bad.
Yeah, there's a few people that were saying that this is too expensive, but I think maybe it's going to hit that bracket of, you have to think the people that are going to buy this PC engine, and they're going to be the real hardcore gamers, and kind of maybe they want that high-end quality experience with it. That's if it does come out in a nice quality and it doesn't feel tacky and plastic.
You make a good point there, because I think something like the PlayStation, for example, because that was such a mainstream platform, and you can get them at a car boot sale for like 15 quid, but the TurboGrafx, it feels something a lot more premium.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at it, and I'm not too clued up about the TurboGrafx. All I knew, it was the TurboGrafx Mini in America, the PC engine in Japan.
Yeah.
Now, I've been doing my research on this. It's actually going to be called the PC Engine Core Graphics Mini in the UK.
Okay.
So, which is quite interesting. I don't even know. I'm hoping somebody messaged me about this and I need to do my research, but I'm assuming that's what it was called when it kind of came out.
Yeah, we've had a few messages because we talked about it last week. Like, did it ever actually come out in the UK?
Yeah, and I'm not too sure.
Yeah, some people said it didn't actually. It was only on grey import or it was a limited quantity. So
I've never seen them.
So we've got the Core Graphics Mini coming to the UK, France, Italy, and it will also be available in Japan. But yeah, I am concerned. It's coming out at £100, the same as the PlayStation Mini, PlayStation Classic. What's the build quality going to be looking like? What's the system going to be looking like? But I'm hoping really hoping they've learned from the Sony's mistakes. And, you know, it is good and people are curious about it. Because I'm curious about it, solely because I don't know a lot about it.
Well, I'm looking through the games list that they've announced. Now, we have got the full lineup here as well. 26 for the PC Engine, 24 for the TurboGrafx 16. And, you know, these are exclusives to each one. In total, 50 games have announced here. So some of them, actually, I do know. We've got stuff on there like R-Type, for example, Space Harrier.
Splatterhouse.
Also, Parasol Stars, which I don't know if you guys remember that game.
Oh, love that game. Yeah, Parasol Stars was wicked.
Was that the follow-up to Bubble Bobble, Rainbow Islands?
Yeah, it was connected to the Rainbow Islands world, wasn't it, as well, yeah. Yeah, and Bonk's Revenge.
Yeah, and Bomberman 93.
There is actually
quite a bit on here that I do recognise that were obviously cross-platform games that came out on other machines as well. But even them, I'm interested to play them to see what they're like on this, you know, superior hardware to what I had at home at the time.
I think what might be a bit of a system seller for some, it's a system seller for me, is Dracula X is coming to it, which is actually Castlevania 5. And I think this is the original version of it because there was like a dumbed down, butchered version for it for the Super Nintendo. So if this is the right version, which I think it is, I think that could be a bit of a system seller for some people as well, because it is for me, because I love Castlevania, so...
And I think it's just, again, like we were saying last week, it's a system I've got absolutely no experience about. And I'm curious. I want to try it out. And I think for 100 quid, it's not bad value with all the games included, because the only other way is to emulate it. And I'm not a big fan of emulation, especially systems when you don't really know what the games are meant to play like, because you don't know if it's accurate emulation.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point, actually. You're like, is this the original music? Because obviously music can be quite a difficult thing to emulate sometimes. So yeah, that's a very interesting point.
Well, there was a guy actually, I mean, just kind of talking on that, I was watching on YouTube the other day. I did a search for a couple of games that I used to play in my Commodore Plus 4 back in the day. And the guy put a game up that was one of my favourites, but the colour palette was completely back to front. It was like negative.
Oh, okay.
And the whole video was commentating about how awful the graphics are and the colours. And all the comments are like, oh my God, who picked that colour palette? Someone who's colourblind. But again, it's because he didn't play the original. He didn't know it wasn't meant to look like that. And I listened to a comment, you know, the few screenshots saying, you might have to check it out here and check your emulation settings.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that is, you know, that's a big point.
That's interesting.
You want to get it spot on.
Yeah.
Now, they're saying it's going to be out on March the 19th, 2020, which, no, it's September next week. It'll be here before we know it, I'm sure. I think, I don't really buy the mini consoles, but I think I will this one.
I think I'm definitely going to pick this one up. I'm just looking through the game list as well, and we've got Snatcher on there as well.
Yeah.
So this is actually an affordable way of playing Snatcher without emulating it.
So are you guys going to buy it? We're always nice to, you know, it's nice to get your feedback. If you're on Twitter, actually, why don't you drop us a little tweet at Retro Hour UK? Will you be buying the TurboGrafx 16 Mini?
Me?
Yeah, will you?
I've bought no minis. No, I'm not interested in them.
Sorry. I'll be buying it.
I like biggies.
Release a full size and
ready. Yeah.
Actually, it's not just the mini consoles that everyone's going crazy for in the world of retro gaming. I was reading this on Kotaku, a really interesting article, talking about people that are collectors of different genres and now coming into retro gaming.
I find this whole thing completely vile. I think these guys need to go back to collecting comics and get the hell out of retro gaming because they're price driving. I've just read this thing in this article. Daniel Smith spent...
She spent
$500,000 on rare games. That's disgusting.
And in the last nine months.
Go away.
I mean, if you delve into the article, I guess it's kind of saving grace that makes me feel a little bit better, is they're only dealing in sealed games.
Yeah.
So they're not dealing in, you know, just cartridges and open battered boxes and stuff like that. She's only after sealed games. But it does feel like they are driving prices up, which I know Ravi absolutely hates.
Yeah.
Because even this article is going on about how expensive some games are, and you're just like, even just doing that drives the price of
But what they're also doing is they're creating a market where they're getting these people that are valuing the games, that are putting grading on it, like a baseball card, like a thing, and that's also driving it up. And then people are thinking, I've got to get this game, I've got to get it graded now, and it's just completely ridiculous. I think there's better things to spend money on than buying games for kind of, you know, investment purposes rather than actually enjoying them.
I feel for a comic book collector who's got $500,000 or whatever it is spare cash just to kind of go into that market and just start buying it just for the sake of trying to make more money out of it.
I hope they're all fakes.
It just feels a little bit soulless, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, she's saying she's actually sold off a lot of her comic collection to buy games. And I mean, people's interests do change over time. And there are people, I mean, I'd never spend that. I mean, I couldn't spend that kind of money on these games.
It just feels like unfair. Like, you know, if someone's been collecting games for like 10 years and they've got every single one and they've gone around and they've found them, and then some rich dude just comes and buys a whole collection. It's just like, grating. You know what I mean?
I get that. Some people have maybe just come along and have suddenly got like every NES game and they bought it all in 5 months. And it's like, there are people out there that have been trying to get that for 35 years.
Yeah.
That's the way of the world, isn't it? You know, life ain't fair, I guess. It does kind of prove that, you know, retro gaming is just reaching, you know, far and beyond what we ever expected.
Crazy
even
levels.
Like 5 years
ago.
So it's nuts. I'll link that up in our show notes if you want to read more about that at theretrohour.com. Now, where it all started, of course, was the arcades. And there's always something about an arcade cabinet. I mean, I've always had these dreams of, like, you know, maybe on a week off, getting some nice wood, getting some tools, making my own cabinet, painting it up. I probably couldn't ever do that because I've got no skills to do it. Or finding an old battered arcade machine, restoring it. I've always wanted an arcade machine in my house. Unfortunately, selling that dream to the missus hasn't been all that successful for me so far.
I think I might be able to sell the dream of this next article to my wife.
Go on, have a go.
So Arcade 1-Up Games cabinets are coming to the UK, which I think is really, really, really interesting. And I think the selling point for some people is, like you just said, it's the issue of having the space. But these are free, they're 3/4 scale, so they're about 4 foot tall, and you build them yourself. So they can kind of, you know, snug just in a corner, you know, and I'm sure you can convince your Mrs. Dan that there's space in the spare room for one.
The spare room's getting pretty crowded out there.
But they do look pretty cool. They're going to be coming out, there's a couple of them announced for the UK, but we haven't got a date yet. They're going to be coming out for £250
it's
each.
It's not bad.
Which isn't bad. And they're not just one game. They do look like, oh, it's just that one game. But there's a Pac-Man one coming out, which has got Pac-Man and Pac-Man Plus on it.
Gallagher
cabinet as well, which is going to have Gallagher and Galaxian on it. And then the most interesting one for me is the Marvel Superheroes one, which is going to have Marvel Superheroes, X-Men Children of the Atom, and the Punisher on there.
Aren't they doing a Street Fighter 2 cabinet?
I must say,
the Street Fighter 2 cabinet as well, which will come with free Street Fighter 2s.
That's awesome.
When I went to America in Walmart, they had all of these everywhere.
Yeah, you said,
and
yeah.
They were awesome. They looked really good. They'd had a kind of display stand, like the pre-built model.
Yeah.
You could have a go on that, and then they had all the flat pack ones at the back.
Did you have a go on it?
Yeah, yeah.
How did it feel on your back? That's the interesting thing.
That was the thing. It's a little bit short, you know.
Yeah, because they're 4 foot, aren't they?
It kind of seems to me that, like, by making it short, that aiming for teenagers and kids, and maybe the mum will go like, oh, okay, we can get in that, you know?
Yeah, maybe. I mean...
Or short asses like me.
I mean, from what I understand, they don't weigh very much.
No, they're pretty light.
So you can probably, you know, put it on a unit or something like that if you wanted
yeah,
to.
Yeah, yeah, you could probably raise it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, these are not really for, like, arcade enthusiasts. I mean, they've got a flat screen in there, not a CRT, which no real arcade proper veteran would ever be seen dead with a flat screen.
But it's an alternative solution for the common man, I guess.
Yeah, but I'm trying to think how they're going to stock it in the UK, because when you go to Walmart, you can buy anything, guns, bicycles, whatever, you know, the whole
lot's
there.
That's a very good point, actually.
I'm wondering what kind of retailers are going to stock this.
I would imagine Argos, maybe.
Red 5.
Argos, yeah, online, Amazon. Maybe Asda will probably have a few.
Maybe Game might have a few in there, or, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting. I do think it's very cool, and I think it is kind of, it's always a dream of gamers of, like, our generation who we've always wanted an arcade at home, and there is still a lot of that, I think, out there, isn't there? I think the games they're picking as well, I mean, it is, you know, it's 80s to a mid-90s stuff, really, so it's obviously aiming at that kind of 30s, 40s.
And I guess it's good to start in America, because they're very arcade-based.
Well, there's quite a few out in
culture.
America. Like, they've got the Mortal Kombat one out, which was really popular, and that came out around the same time as Mortal Kombat 11. So I wonder if they bring that one over.
I'm sure there'll
be
ways to mod it as well. So.
Yeah, get Doom on there.
And just playing those games with arcade quality controls.
Yeah.
And that is a big part of it, isn't it? I mean, trying to play it on, like, your Xbox at home with a controller, it never feels right.
No, I always end up playing with the D-pad, you know, whenever playing these arcade games and stuff on console, because it just doesn't feel right with the analog stick, whereas obviously these will hopefully have that nice click to them.
And they better be strong. That is dumb. Bash arcade.
Yeah,
ball.
You still do.
I think they're probably made of MDF. Yeah,
falls apart.
Now, before we get into this week's crossover episode with our good friends from Arcade Attack, let's talk about Beneath a Steel Sky. Now, this was, I mean, Joe asked me before, he goes, what's Beneath a Steel Sky? You weren't much of a point and click gamer back in the day.
No, not really.
I mean, Ravi were, though, and, like, this was a game that came out, I want to say, about 93.
Yeah.
And it was set in a kind of futuristic Blade Runner-esque kind of
cyberpunky world.
Yeah, and it was a great point and click adventure game, and I actually played it through again, maybe not last summer, a year before, the talkie version I played through.
It was made by Revolution, wasn't it? Yeah.
It was, and that was a great game, and I remember getting that as a cover disc on Amiga format originally, and, like, you know, just what a great atmosphere that game had. And then we heard last year they're going to be doing not a reboot, but a sequel all these years later.
Yeah, and this is with the original Revolution guys, so Charles Cecile. And, you know, when we originally saw the screenshots, I'm going to admit it, I said that it looked crap. And
well, we did on the show at the time. We're like, does it really going to work?
Yeah.
How does it look? It's modern, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah, it's modern. It's got a kind of a cartoony-like look, but it's got that, like, solid texture thing going on that looks good. And you know, I was thinking, it's not amazing, until I saw the gameplay footage that they've just released. And this is very interesting. There's lots of elements in the game that I didn't think they'd have before. So whatever you do in the game affects the world around it and changes the character. So it's one of these kind of decision based games now.
Yeah, so what you do affects the outcome of the game.
Yeah, but it's also in a sandbox, but there's a narrative that's built into the sandbox. So I don't know if you go to certain parts, different things change, you talk to different people, which is a really cool idea for a RPG, actually.
Yeah, it does give like a proper... It brings it in the 21st century. It gives it a modern kind of feel to it. And I think looking... I mean, some people comment the animation could be improved. I think it looks good enough. I think it looks smooth.
Yeah, and I guess this is like a little, test version, but also there's another thing which was essential in the original one, which was humour. Yeah. And Joey the robot was this little partner that would follow him around. And
you put him in a vacuum cleaner.
And it provided a lot of humour. And I've just seen in the trailer and there's like Joey the robot stuck to a magnet and bouncing around. And I'm like, oh my God, Joey's in there. So I've totally changed my mind. I want to play this.
They had to have Joey back in it, didn't they?
Yeah.
Now, they are saying the game's going to be out later on this year. So hopefully you should get it for Christmas for consoles, PC and Apple devices later in 2019. So if you want to check out the trailer. I think it's shaping up to be pretty good, actually. I'm going to get this. I'm hyped for it. Just getting a follow-up story to one of my favourite games.
And I like that idea that, you know, the game experience isn't going to be the same every time, depending on what you do.
So you want to check out that trailer, I'll put it in our show notes at theretrohour.com. Now, I'm drinking coffee at the moment. You got something a bit more exciting over there, Ravi.
Oh, God.
Your magical box.
I've got a magical box of beer that you haven't actually let me look at yet.
It keeps saying, can I open it now? It's like Christmas morning with this boy.
There it is.
How nice of you look. Now, the reason that we've got beer on our desk is because this week's show is brought to you by some very good friends of ours. Our friends at Beer 52 are back. How much do we love Beer 52?
Oh, yeah.
We've always said there is nothing better, no greater match in the world than beer and video games. So if you're not familiar with Beer 52, they are absolute pioneers, the world's most popular craft beer discovery club. Now, every month, you get 8 craft beers with different themes. They've done stuff in the past like California, Norway, Belgium, Amsterdam, loads of countries around the world. And of course, you know, they're true to the roots. They cover lots of areas of Britain as well. And your first box will be sent to you next day and contain beer from all over Europe. So we'd like to give you a crate of your own Beer 52 beer. Now, you boys are a bit distracted at the moment looking through the beers in there. What's in the box, Rabbit?
Yeah, so they've got a good selection of stuff, actually. There's a lot of amber ales. There's some really strange IPAs as well. Blackberry milkshake. Oh, nice. We're going to try that. But they've got snacks as well. So you've got a little curry roasted chickpeas here. And there's a... Oh, God. It's full of stuff, basically.
It just keeps on going and going. You can hear me. I'm in the background, guys.
But this is really nice because I'm a big, big fan of pale ale. And this is a complete kind of pale ale box.
And that is the thing about Beer 52. You can tailor it to your preferences. So if you don't like dark beers, you can have whatever you want. And then you can also rate and review all the beers that you've collected on their website as well. Now, we'd like to give you your own free box from Beer 52. And actually, if you sign up within the next 2 weeks, you get 2 extra free beers. So that is a total of 10 free beers as well. So all you have to do, if you'd like it, and this will be sent next day, you can be enjoying it start of next week. It'll contain beer from all over Europe. And the good thing about Beer 52 is they don't hold you to a ransom. You can leave absolutely anytime you want. So if you'd like to get a box of beer, a snack, and a copy of their really interesting Ferment magazine. You don't realise how interesting beer is until you have a look through that, really good. All you have to do is nip onto their website right now. It is beer52.com/retro, and you will get your free box of Beer 52 through the door. All you have to do is cover the £4.95 postage. So check that out right now. You'll be really helping out the show, of course, as well, at beer52.com/retro, and do it in the next 2 weeks and get an extra 2 unmissable beers for free. Right then, let's talk retro gaming memories with our good friends at Arcade Attack. You're listening to the Retro Hour podcast, and it is our pleasure to do our first ever crossover episode with another podcast. Can't believe it's taken us, 3.5 years to get to doing this. And this is actually one of our favourite British retro gaming podcasts. Now, it is our pleasure to welcome to the show Adrian, Dill and Rob from the wonderful Arcade Attack podcast. Welcome to the Retro Hour, guys.
Wow. Thank you. That's the first time we've ever been called wonderful. Cheers, Dan.
Well, I mean,
we are massive fans ourselves, so it's a huge honour. So thank you so much.
Yeah, cheers
for getting us on today.
Yeah, no problem at all. Well, I mean, one thing we always kind of like to do on our show is kind of, you know, kind of set up your kind of backgrounds and kind of find out where gaming started for you guys. I mean, starting with you, Adrian, what was kind of your earliest gaming memory then? What kind of got you into it all?
Oh, it's got to be the Spectrum for me. My uncle, who I talk about quite a lot on the podcast on Arcade Attack, he's huge into games and computers, and he had a Spectrum first. And my mum got one a few months later, and I must have been like 5 or 6. And it really, really impressed me. I remember spending hours, me and my brothers, also like programming and stuff, and really got into it. But probably the biggest memory of growing up for me for gaming is probably the Amiga, actually. So again, my uncle got it first. And yep, a few months later, I managed to persuade my parents to get me the Amiga 600, I think the cartoon pack. So that's how I started, and it's gone on from there, really. So they're my two favourites of earliest memories, definitely.
Yeah, that was me as well. Christmas 91, getting the cartoon classics. Ooh, I remember brilliant. That. Yeah, I think I played on that Bart versus the Space Mutants game. Like, I wouldn't come for Christmas dinner. I was just mesmerised by it.
No, because I remember you mentioned in a recent of your pods that you love, or you did enjoy Captain Planet, yes. And I'm the same, actually. It didn't have good reviews, but there's something about it. I just can't hate that game, actually.
That game was rubbish, guys.
We'll defend it, Dan, won't we?
Yeah, I think me and you are the only people in the world who like that game.
Yeah, I was playing something cool like Walker.
Could have been Widget the World Warrior, the game.
Ooh.
What's that?
It's like the worst environmental-themed cartoon show there's ever been.
We need more environmental-themed computer games.
Yeah, there's not many out there, is there?
No, people need to design these better than Captain Planet.
Was there a Toxic Avenger game?
Oh, God, there was. That was horrendous as well.
Yeah, there was Global Gladiators, of course, don't forget.
Well, you just, like, squirt goo at everyone. Yeah. Like, okay, that's not quite environmental, but...
Well, not everyone, just mud monsters.
Oh, yeah. Damn those mud monsters.
Well, what about the rest of you guys, then, in terms of early gaming memories? What did start for you, Dil?
So, I suppose our crossover listeners would have heard this story about 5 times, but... back in the late 80s, one of my cousins had this Pong machine for the telly. It took her about half an hour to get the thing moving, but I just thought it looked phenomenal. I was like, you know, video games are it. And that was the year, well, it must have been sort of mid-1990, late 1990, they had those Sega adverts running all the time on the telly. I think alternately the Master System ones, the Mega Drive ones. So I dragged my dad down to Woolworths Christmas 1990, and I said, oh, I've got to have one of these. And they were both on the shelf, but I didn't really know what a Mega Drive was. So the Mega Drive was there and the Master System was there. And I was like, ooh, with a Master System, you get 2 control pads and a light phaser. And I'm like, oh, man, you got to go for that, Dad. Let's get that instead. So I got that and Ghostbusters. And then I didn't realize until about 2-3 months later that the Hang On and Safari Hunt were actually built into the power base. So then I had 2 more games and the Snail Maze game. And then that just got me into it, really. I was just hooked after. I was like, oh, my God, this is amazing. So every Christmas, every birthday, I just nag my parents and my family for video games. And
well, at least he got those built in as well. I think a friend of mine, Dougie, he had Alex Kidd. That was the only game he had for about 6 months.
Alex, yeah. Yes, and the Master System 2 was great as well. He had the Sonic one. He had the Alex Kidd one. But, yeah, they were later. I was a Mark 1 Master System guy. So, you know.
And what about you, Rob? Where did it begin for you?
DOS PC for me, I think. Oh, like,
cool. Well, that'd be a PC game.
Well, if you can call these games, I mean, they're like, it was kind of 4 colors, so you'd either be in the computer lab at school learning like how to use a computer for the first time, and they had like 4-color Tetris there, and we kind of got a home computer around the same time, so we actually, I think the first game I remember playing on that was like a text-based game. Like a text-based kind of horror game.
Oh, I love those. I love those so bad.
It's a bit like Choose Your Own Adventure book in the sense that almost everything you did would kill you. So it's like you see an apple and you kind of go, eat apple, and it says, you bite into the apple and bite right through a razor blade and die.
Or it's like, turn left or right. Well, I'll just turn left. You died.
They were brutal, some of those games, weren't they?
They were.
Well... How did you guys end up meeting then?
Oh, wow. We've known each other for like 25?
We all went to school with each other, which is really funny because we all, you know, I've known Rob came a couple of years later.
We're high school together. Yeah,
I've known Adrian since about 11 or 12. We were in the same sort of tech classes and stuff, and German classes. And...
Yeah, and Keith, the fourth Arcade Attack member, the most mysterious Arcade Attack member.
Keith is like my best friend. So, you know, we met at 11, we're in the same form group and everything. And we've just found later in life that we have this joint hobby or, you know, passion. Yeah. It's quite surreal. And all we do, you know, our episodes are just what you'd get from us down the pub, basically, just based around video games. So I think that, you know, that's a lot of our appeal. But yeah, it's just, you know, known these guys a long time. I'll know these guys till I'm dead, probably.
We have a Zimmer Frames playing the old Jaguar, I think.
Oh, man, Sonic 2 with the Zimmer Frames.
Yeah. Every single episode, you have to bring up the Jaguar.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, we snuck it in, Atari Jaguar.
It does make me laugh thinking about that, though, because in the future, yeah, what will nursing homes be like in, like, you know, 30, 40 years? We'll all be playing local LAN gaming.
Brilliant. Yeah. Yeah. You'll have, like, arcades set up in old people's homes.
Quake tournaments.
So basically, it's going to be what you imagined adulthood would be like when you were 10 years old.
Yeah. Like, just LAN parties and just, you know... Arcade club will be for OAPs. Yeah. It'll be brilliant.
GoldenEye, 24 hours.
Craig David on the radio.
Craig David, yay.
100%.
Well, your show is called Arcade Attack. I mean, let's talk about the arcade demo. Because, I mean, back in the day, they were kind of the go-to place when you had enough money or your mum and dad took you to the seaside. I mean, what were kind of the go-to arcade machines that you guys would always make a beeline for?
Well, we're based in Croydon. So when we were growing up, really, we had a place called Sega World.
We had Sega World.
Which is above a quite a famous shop called Alders. I think it was like top floor, wasn't it? I'm talking
about... No, it was Devon.
Oh, Devon, the one next to it. And we just love going there, just playing the old Mortal Kombat and virtual racing and stuff.
I don't know, man. Like, not for me. Cause I'm kind of. I only moved over to England when I was 11. I was born in South Africa.
Yeah.
So for me, I think it was one of those kind of things where every kind of corner store would have an arcade machine in there, and you'd kind of like put some money in when you were there, kind of play that, or like the big bowling alley. My mom like was a bowler, and she'd basically kind of go to the league games and just give me, I guess, the equivalent of maybe $5 and say, like, get some change, head to the arcade. It's brilliant. But, yeah, go-to games, Street Fighter 2, I think, was the big one.
Yeah, me too. But these two are much better at video games than I was. So when I used to go to an arcade, a £10 would last me about 15 minutes, and then I'd have to go home. So yeah, when consoles really kind of took off, that was much more exciting for me, but... Yeah.
Oh, actually, now I can think of it. I think we had an episode on this, but the Simpsons arcade game
was
the huge
classic.
One.
Four-player, yeah.
Yeah, four-player, yeah.
Well,
I had to be Marge on that one.
I just found the arcades, wherever you were, there's always people playing like Street Fighter 2, and I used to enjoy watching people play as well, so it wasn't all about playing it.
You ever have any of those like Pirate Street Fighter 2 machines that got turned into... Champion Edition. We had loads of those, like
dodgy colors and stuff.
No, not dodgy colors, but like you'd have kind of Ken or Ryu would do a fireball, and it would be two fireballs going to figure of eight, or they do this kind of thing where there'd be eight fireballs in a row.
We did. There was like a dodgy, a kind of casho arcade that was down Surrey Street. I think you had one of those in.
There you go. More dodgy arcades needed.
In there. Yeah, it wasn't meant to be in there. That was for like over 18s, but I kind of snuck in there one day. But yeah, we had those. What about you guys anyway up there? What kind of?
Well, you guys seem spoiled, like with Sega World, because I remember going there once, and even like there was a kind of community around Sega World. I remember even the hackers would do a meeting on the bottom floor.
Oh wow!
Where they'd discuss. Like monthly hacking exploits and stuff, and even when Sega World shut down, they still kind of gathered there. But we had a expensive Namco one in Nottingham, and then up the road, the Sun Valley Amusements, which was full of hair gel and cigarettes, and that was good just to hang around there. But we had this very strange virtual reality place as well, where it was like a virtual reality medieval adventure in the 90s, and my friend. Went on there and got a seizure.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah, that's yeah.
That's not good.
No.
Is that where the warnings came in, surely?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, crikey.
You know, you guys made an interesting point there about the fact that, you know, seeing arcade machines in random places. So that kind of brought it back to me. My local video shop, I remember, had Toki in it. I remember that game was in
the
Turkey.
Monkey.
Yeah, we'd go in there and, like, you know, wouldn't rent videotapes. We'd just play on that. And there was a fish and chip shop near my school on the corner where they had Golden Axe in there something else. I can't remember, maybe Turtles as well. We'd all just go in there for lunch, and it's just you'd see arcade machines in, like, the most weird places, wouldn't you?
Yeah, down the road in Mitcham, there was a choplifter in a chip shop. So there was a choplifter in the chip shop. It was, you know, pretty sweet. Pretty bad game, actually, all in all. But yeah, love it. You don't get that now. You know,
it's quite sad, really. The arcade's dying out, really, isn't it?
Well, you see some of those MAME cabinets, though.
Yeah.
Like, people have set up those in random shops and things. You can still bump into those. I don't know how legal they are, but...
We have quite a well-known store in Croydon called Play Nation Games, and I think they had Street Fighter 2, the movie, the game, didn't they?
They did, didn't
on
they?
On arcade.
Oh, man.
A bizarre choice.
It was. They must have got it for nothing. So I was just trying to give it away to them.
Well, what was the kind of coolest arcade machine you saw? Because I remember the Sega R360 and the Time Traveler and stuff, but yeah. House of the Dead was good as well.
All of those Sega racing ones were just phenomenal to actually, like, experience. Because we had Outrun and stuff before, but you know, actually, like, proper the frame rate on Daytona and Virtua Racing, and just seeing those.
Man,
for me,
I think for me, top three reverse order. Any of the shooting ones, we had the actual games, but especially Terminator 2.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Afterburner.
Yeah.
The
Afterburner.
One that's in Terminator 2, Judgment Day.
Afterburner again, I'd last about 10 seconds.
And so much fun, though. Oh, and Super Hang On with a big bike was really cool as well. But cool. No, Champ is going to be the... What is it? What was it called? It was the version of Ridge Racer where you're an actual full-on car.
Yeah.
If you went into Piccadilly Circus, you'd like have this massive screen, but you were like kind of a full-size sports car.
You're in the car. They still have those somewhere in the country. Somewhere up north.
We had one in my local bowling alley, I remember. There was one in there randomly.
I just wouldn't leave it. I'd just stay in the car like all day.
It was £3 a pop.
Okay, maybe not.
Rinses your money. I used to love, I think it's Mad Dog McCree as well.
Yeah.
Love that. Because that was really a massive screen, the proper sort of Western guns. That really drew me in as well, actually.
I was trying to play that on the Philips CDI the other week. playing it with that controller, remote control, yeah. I couldn't even get past the first enemy on it, yeah.
How did that go?
Yeah, not very well. But Ravi mentioned something interesting there. Time Traveler. Do you guys remember that game? That was kind of like, I remember seeing that, and it was like, it was a Sega game with holograms in it. And I remember seeing that thinking every arcade game is going to be like this in the future.
That's a new one. No, yeah. We could research that for a podcast.
Yeah, look it up. It didn't do very well, but it was kind of it was a machine that was kind of a top overview machine, and it had these kind of bits of foam around it. And then I think it was like a Western kind of game, but the characters were coming as holograms.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sounds a bit like Westworld, the video game.
Yeah, so it must have been about 92, maybe.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we've talked about the arcades, but... what kind of systems did you have, and what did you love when you were growing up?
The Amiga kept me going for a good number of years, truthfully, until I think my brother spilled coffee on it and it died. And then we soon replaced it with a PC. But in between that, I got a Mega Drive and a Jaguar, actually.
Wait, your parents let you drink coffee when you were kids?
It was my older brother, but he's not that much older.
Yeah, younger. Older.
So... and actually it's interesting, I'm quite a young dad actually, so I got into the sort of Nintendo consoles quite heavily as well, where I think the other guys, they went a bit more sort of hardcore. So I've got a massive love for the Nintendo, and actually before that, the Zelda games, Ocarina of Time or N64, I must have spent hours on that. So I've had a lot of consoles, I think mainly because I've got two other brothers, so we kind of shared consoles and whatnot, and... luckily for me, my mum kept them all in the loft, and she gave them back to me about 3 years ago. It coincided really well when Dylan started Arcade Attack, so it's almost like the stars were aligned. And
there's lots of lovely coincidences with us, isn't there?
No, but I'd call myself like a PC gamer as well. So the other guys, I don't want to put words in the mouth, are very sort of Sega, Sega heavier.
Well, I think all four of us had Mega Drives. I had a Famicom, the Japanese NES. And then kind of moved on to N64. And you're a Master System though, right, Dil?
Oh, dude, I was all about the Master System. That thing, you know, I survived a good few years with that. And then, like Adrian, I got an Amiga. And then the Amiga lasted me about 3-4 years, I think. And then I got a Mega Drive during that time. Then it went PlayStation. So the late 90s was all about PlayStation. and PlayStation 2. Yeah. And then that's about it. I mean, that, you know, those are my favorite consoles. And only now am I getting around to playing, you know, experiencing the Dreamcast and the Saturn and the N64. So, yeah, another reason that Arcade Attack has kept going is because we want to find out more about stuff we never played. And I always have a go at Adrian saying that he's had access to more platforms than all the rest of us put together. But right now, you know, it's a good time for us to kind of get to these systems and chat about them.
Yeah, I think Keith just got a 3DO, so we're going to be taking a look at that.
Yeah, we've got a 3DO episode coming up, so that will be quite interesting, I hope.
I know that you guys are big Amiga fans. Is that fair, Dan and Ravi?
Oh, yeah.
You know Ravi is.
I kept with it till, God, 2002, 2003.
That's all you use now, isn't it, an Amiga?
No.
I love the Amiga. I tried dabbling in a bit of music on the Amiga, Octomed and Soundtracker and all those other ones, and I failed miserably. I mean, it was fun, but, you know, you don't want to listen to it. I think I made Adrian a tape once, didn't I, of my Amiga songs when we were about 15 or 16. Oh dear, with my dulcet tones in between the.
I played it to my girlfriend at the time, and it was a bit off-putting.
Were you being a DJ then? Were you?
They were doing something else.
At what point did you play that?
None of your beeswax. This is some good mood music.
Soundtrack of Lotus 2 in the background or something.
Oh yeah, what a great soundtrack.
Well, what games did you kind of used to sink most time into as kids? Like, I used to play Syndicate a lot, and I'd just walk around the city persuading loads of people to join a huge army and then take on the police.
Mate, you're going to love this. We've literally just recorded a Syndicate episode.
Oh, awesome.
We were waxing lyrical about that the other day, because I put a fair bit of... almost completed that game. Almost. Most of my time, actually, it's funny, because... We say about, you know, retro gaming and platformers and that and that. Most of my time, if you put it all together, has gone into football management games. Because they just suck the life out of you, in a good way, obviously. But, you know, Football Manager, Championship Manager, Player Manager, Premier Manager, I think I've had all of them. So that's probably the most time. But I like a good RPG. I like my Final Fantasies. But platformers are great just to pick up. You always pick up a bit of Sonic. I pick up, you know, beat 'em up, Streets of Rage, Fighter Games, Street Fighter 2. Those are my kind of go-to stuff.
Yeah, I mean, for me, really, I never really got into Zelda games before when they came out on the NES and the SNES, really. It was when I got my N64, there was a big advert saying Zelda Ocarina of Time is going to be the best game ever. I begged my mum for it for Christmas. I didn't get it. I begged my mum for my birthday a few weeks later. I still didn't get it. My brother came down on the day and said, look, I've got you a birthday present. Most generous gift ever from my brother. And it was Ocarina of Time. And, oh, man, I did every single side mission, all the heart pieces. I think I almost got kicked off college the amount of time I put into it. I skipped a few days. I shouldn't really be saying that, I think. But so definitely after that Zelda, I was hooked. And I think I've played every single Zelda game since, actually. So they're the games. That's the franchise that resonates with me the most. Probably before that, the Monkey Islands, absolutely adore point-and-click adventures. They'll be my favourites. And like Dylan said, I've put stupid amounts of time into like Championship Manager, which is... you don't really get much out of it looking back, but there you go.
You talk about ruining college, though. I think the game that ruined college for me was Half-Life. I think you let me Half-Life, and then that was it. I just didn't see the outside world for weeks.
You literally halved the scores of your grades.
It was such an atmospheric game, Half-Life, though, wasn't it?
I hadn't seen anything like that. Yeah. I'd only just got a PC. And like Adrian just lent me all of these PC games, and I thought, okay, well, there's SimCity in there. Yeah, that's cool. Okay, I had the Sega. Yeah. You had like Sega Rally and, you know, the PC conversions of that. But Half-Life was just, it just sucks you in. You know, it just completely sucks you in, that game. I love it.
Yeah, I think it kind of depends what point you are in life, like what kind of, how you kind of play those games.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I was 11, 12, when I got a new game, I would just obsessively play it until I finished it.
Oh, God, yeah.
And, like, I think we were talking before about Earthworm Jim. You were saying you found it pretty hard. I was like, I nailed that in a week. I just did not stop playing.
It puts me off Earthworm Jim.
Yeah. But the game I probably spent the most time on overall, Mario Kart 64, because you go there and you, like, put it on and you just listen to music for about 2 or 3 hours while you played. And if you kind of do that consecutively on and on and on, that kind of racks up, which is great now because... we've got like an arcade game bar down the road from where I live, and they actually have four-player Mario Kart 64 on like a big screen.
That's the four quarters, isn't it?
It's four quarters in Peckham.
Peckham, yeah. So we're occasionally down there. So if any listeners are frequenters of said bar, you probably bump into us at some point.
Well, I think you're an occasional one. Like
me, I'm occasional.
I mean, well, for me, it's pretty much the bar that's open past closing time. So yeah, I'm in there frequently.
Go back to Mario Kart 64, though, Rob. Is it better than Diddy Kong Racing?
Oh dear. We've had me and Rob actually almost came to fisticuffs about these two games, which is the better one. I think one of our listeners tweeted, said, "Oh, I like Adrian, I like Rob. It's a shame they don't like each other much." And like, we have known each other for like 25 years.
Oh, you can be brutally honest with each other after all that time, can't you?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. No.
We can be brutally honest with each other. I think that's another reason that this is going on so long, is that we can just kind of, we know everything about each other. Which is strange and good at the same time. But yeah, we can just take the mick out of each other.
You know, kind of talking about then, you know, the amount of time that used to sink into games, that kind of made me quite nostalgic. You know, thinking when school summer holidays started and you thought, I've got nothing to do now for 6 weeks, but sit down and play video games all summer long. You do kind of miss having that time to dedicate to them, don't you?
I don't know. I think I prefer drinking.
Yeah. Well, you can combine the two these days.
Well, do you know what, Dan? I feel a bit bad because I'm actually a teacher, so I've got the summer holidays off.
You can actually do that.
Yeah, I've got kids and whatnot, so it's not quite as much free time, truthfully. But yeah, I've got a few spare days now, truthfully.
And I'm a full-time dad at the minute, so I can kind of do the same.
Oh, it's just me then, yeah.
But no, you're right. I think, again, a lot of the nostalgia, a lot of people, you know, why people really like retro gaming is they remember those days where they were, well, self-locked away playing video games all holidays. And I used to love that, you know. It was, again, football management games, basically. but, yeah, it was a great time. And it's a shame that now we're all working. Eventually, when I go back to work, I'll be a working person again. But, yeah.
How about you, Dan and Ravi? What games have you put the most time into?
For me, it was point and clicks as well, I think. You mentioned Monkey Island there. I think Monkey Island 1 and 2. Oh, yeah. I remember my brother and I we'd sit up, you know, like when mum and dad would go to bed and we'd wake up and we'd turn the computer on, try and keep it all quiet. And we'd play till like 2 or 3 in the morning and then try not to look too knackered next morning. And then Beneath a Steel Sky, I remember sinking so much time into that game.
Colonization for me. That was a real, real big strategy game. After Civ, Colonization, and then Unreal Tournament when that came out. I absolutely caned that game.
It's crazy, isn't it? I mean, you think, was that a waste of hours in your life? But it wasn't really, was it? Let's be honest.
Yeah, because I could rocket jump afterwards.
Yeah, it's true.
You still can to this day, right?
Where did you guys kind of stand on the playground wars? So obviously you all had Segas with a big group of Nintendo guys at your school that you'd start arguments with.
Not that I can remember. I don't know if I knew anyone who really had a SNES. Like there was one kid on our street, and you know, you'd kind of go, you'd play with him because he had a SNES. But no, apart from that, I think, like, I don't know if there's a clique or anything, but obviously, I don't think I knew anyone who didn't have a Mega Drive, like, when the kind of 16-bit thing. Yeah. You know, I knew people who had Amigas, but like, I didn't know anyone who had a SNES and not Mega Drive.
Well, I might offend a few people now, but when I was growing up, I got Mega Drive a bit later, but it was all about Amiga for me. And in my eyes, probably it sounds stupid now, I honestly thought the Amiga had the best games and all the platforms, all the genres, the best driving games, the best point and click adventures. And I
the best platform mascot.
And I even thought at the time when Zool came out, and I get a lot of hate for this, I honestly thought at the time that Zool was better than Mario and Sonic.
Well, the magazines hyped it up, didn't they? The Sonic killer for the Amiga.
That's what and I know it went on different platforms, but for me, I thought Zool, this is it. He's cooler than Sonic, and he's faster than Mario.
It's like being in a cult.
I think there's a kind of delusions of grandeur with the Amiga user base, and there always has been. I had that belief as well, you know.
But there wasn't, I mean, in our playground, it was all Sega, really. I just wonder, because even though Nintendo was bigger globally, I just wonder whether Sega was more popular in England.
It was cooler, I think. Like
cooler, yeah.
Mega Drive, at that point, I think, was the cool console. The SNES had, like, you knew it had technically better graphics and sound and more colours, but
we didn't care about that.
But, you know, we've kind of talked about it like this. You know, the Mega Drive was the console that was on the, like, the inside and the inlay for, like, the Beastie Boys albums. Mm-hmm. It was the console. It was in Swingers, like, when they were playing stuff. It was the cool one, like the jet black and at Sonic SNES was like kind of, it felt a bit kiddie. At Street Fighter 2 and Starwing, but that was the thing, like every so often they'd bring out this killer game and you'd think, oh, I really wish I could play that.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I mean, for me it was Zelda Link to the Past actually. That's the game I really wanted to play. But Ocarina of Time was the first time I played the proper Zelda game, so there you go.
I know you guys have had Tom Kalinske on your show. You know, we had him on a couple of years ago too, and I think they did such a good job with the Mega Drive. The marketing was just spot on, wasn't it? And the timing and everything.
I think, you know, because reading Console Wars and then you have, you know, having the honor of speaking to Tom, it was just, you know, the decisions they made.
Yeah.
You know, if they did one thing differently, then the Mega Drive wouldn't have been what it was, and Sonic. You know, the input they had to Sonic, I don't know how he would have turned out, but thankfully he turned out blue and, you know, fit for family purposes.
not with a human girlfriend. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, it was a real honor having, you know, having a chance to speak to him. But, yeah, the Sega and the console was, it's just a real shame that Sega isn't around in a console making, you know, atmosphere anymore.
But I think, like, that's part, it's kind of what's interesting about looking back. Like, I mean, we kind of talk about nostalgia and what we used to be into, but I think a large part of looking at these games in retrospect is kind of seeing what else was around there, not just like kind of the other games it was competing against or the other systems, but what else was happening culturally. Like, I know, like, we're coming up to Mortal Monday, so we're going to be doing a Mortal Kombat show, but like, you kind of look at all those like characters everything was based on, and it's all kind of links back to old films, and you know, I think it's interesting kind of see what else is going on in terms of like society and politics, if you want to go that far, or just kind of like what the people who are actually making the games and playing the games were watching on TV and movies, what they're listening to, music, like it all fits together.
Yeah.
I watched a great YouTube video the other day. It was all the samples in Golden Axe, where they've come from, and it was like, you know, with movies and stuff, and it's really weird seeing them in a movie.
They really did rip off a lot of stuff, didn't they, video game developers back in them days? But
I'm sure that, I think Commando has been used in a few games, isn't there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Operation Wolf.
I think so, yeah.
Operation Wolf.
Gold, it's brilliant, actually.
Oh, well, which magazines did you guys read back in the day? Because, you know, in that pre-internet era, that was where we got all our information and demo discs and everything.
Yeah, like, when I think was heavily into kind of like gaming and like especially Sega stuff, used to, I think, buy 2 or 3 a month. But for me, I think we're going to have to do like an extra episode of this at some point. But for me, kind of, Mean Machine, Sega, and Games Master were like the top, and I think Nintendo Magazine System was really good as well. Like, I used to read that occasionally, even though I didn't really have like an actual Nintendo machine. But it was funny because the lower down you went in quality, the better free gifts you get on the front of like the magazine.
Easy. Rob always has a go at me because I was an avid Sega Power reader, and which he thinks is kind of bottom of the pile. But
it's not bottom of the pile.
It's near bottom of the pile. Goal. But I loved it, and I remember one of the issues came with a cassette tape with some Kathy Dennis songs on it, and also she would read you out hints and tips from certain Mega Drive games that I didn't have, but I didn't care because it was Kathy Dennis on my tape.
They must have really made the most of that studio time with her then to get it.
They really did. They maxed it.
Pretty sure they also had an issue where they had like a free book, and the book was Sonic the Hedgehog, the novelization.
No, oh, they had a Desert Strike one. I've got the Desert Strike one somewhere.
Was it like super kind of, I don't want to say writing, it was super like pro-American propaganda. Limited skirmish in the Middle East.
Well, I like the Amiga magazines personally because
I had those as well.
I think it was Amiga Power, wasn't it?
Amiga Power, CU Amiga.
Because they all had I felt quite smug really because you couldn't get a free cartridge on a Mega Drive or a Sega one. So I got the free demos, sometimes full games actually. I think towards the end of the Amiga life, they gave out some free games in the front of the magazine. So
there was a lot of PD stuff, wasn't there?
Yeah, definitely.
Public domain stuff in there.
Was Amiga Power the magazine that Kieran Gillen was on?
They don't look at me.
Amiga Power was the...
Body Blows first and stuff like that. Loved it.
It was the kind of controversial one where they'd often do like really hardcore reviews.
Yeah.
What about you guys? What magazines did you kind of read back in the day?
Yeah, I was Amiga Format. I'd buy every month. CU Amiga as well. I buy CVG sometimes too. Ace, I remember getting a few issues of that.
Yeah, my uncle used to give me loads of PC Gamer, CVG, Games Master. They were often about 2 or 3 months out of date, but I didn't care.
Yeah.
I got them for free, and I just love looking at them. And it's I love the idea of checking out the games in the future. And it's when I first saw the glimpse of Alien vs Predator on the Jaguar, it sort of blew my mind. My little mind back then, I was like, I need this console in my life.
Well, I was into CVG when they started introducing the nice-looking ladies on it. That's what got my interest. But I was wondering, which gaming TV shows would you guys watch?
Games World for me every all the time.
That's it, because I didn't have Sky, so I missed. I'm only watching Games World on YouTube now. But,
I mean,
yeah.
I went to like a filming of Games World.
Nice.
Actually went, was in the audience, but nice. It's weird because you go to like a filming of any TV show and the room they film in is tiny.
Yeah, well, yeah.
But yeah, it was cool. Got to see Bob Mills and kind of all the kids playing the games and stuff. And I used to love, they had that kind of, that like comedy night, because it was on 5 days a week in the Sky. And you used to have like a kind of comedy day on Tuesday with a pre-famed David Walliams in.
Yeah, he was in it. Was the, going back to the studio size though, was it bigger or smaller than the Brain Teaser studio?
Well, nothing is smaller than the Brain Teaser studio, but it was...
These two have been small. On a Channel 5 quiz show, which no one's ever heard of.
I was going to say, what's mugged. Brain Teaser? Yeah, I've never heard of it.
They talk about it every day.
Only like mums from like the early 2000s will even know what it is.
We don't like to talk about it, but the
weird... We both failed.
are these on YouTube then, are they? Can we see these anywhere?
I don't know. Is Brain Teaser on YouTube?
I don't think anyone bothered putting that.
It's weird because we both beat everyone else in the show and then bottled it on the final round. And then, like, it was probably different for you, but I kind of... I can't remember what time of year I was on, but I kind of went back to university and, like, about a month or two later, someone came up to me in the bar and said, were you on Brain Teaser?
Yeah, I had that actually back at... Because everyone from university had been watching it as well. But, yeah, because we both got to the last bit. And they use these little tricks. I don't know if you guys know, but when you're sort of against the clock in a quiz show, they definitely ramp up the volume, like as that kind of as it beeps down, and it puts you off like you would not believe. And I was like, it just froze me. I only had like 18 seconds to guess this thing, and I just couldn't do it. And I was like, oh
man, get the tension building.
Well, the tension, mate. And I was like stomping around Oxford afterwards like the Hulk. Like, it wasn't
they're just bitter, Dan and Ravi. They're just bitter people in front of us.
yeah. But yeah, games going back to video game shows, yeah. Games Master was the one. I mean, that just blew my mind. It blew my little tiny little mind. But you know, just seeing Dominic Diamond and you know, all those guys.
Dexter Fletcher.
He's all right. Yeah, he's all right. Hi, Dex. Those and Bad Influence. Those two.
I did like Bad Influence. Yeah.
Yeah, I have to say your Andy Crane episode generally was really really interesting. It's when I really got into your show actually properly. I thought that was an excellent interview, by the way.
Yeah, cheers for that. He was an interesting guy because he was like, before we did it, we had to ask him for months and he's like, oh, I don't really remember anything about it. I'm not into video games. You know, I had no real interest in it. Then we got him on. He started to get fired up about it. He was like,
I love Bits though. I don't know if you guys remember that.
It was a bit
cheeky, a little bit risque possibly, a little bit late at night, but I think we're all that kind of lad culture, you know, half a few drinks from the pub. Bits was brilliant. I thought it probably wouldn't work so well in today's TV, truthfully, but there's something about it that really caught my eye.
You're making it sound like the nuts of TV shows.
It was a bit better than that, but there you go.
I loved Fum Candy, which was like an E&E documentary he did. That I thought that was amazing.
That was brilliant. I mean, I spoke to Ian Lee about that, and he said, that's one of the shows he regrets doing. I'm like, don't say that, Ian.
No.
Didn't you have Matthew Smith on that? Wasn't that like Matthew Smith?
Yeah, Matthew Smith. They had the founders of Atari. They had, it's just a real exploration of all the amazing stuff.
Marky Smith was on a video game show.
Yeah, Matthew. Yeah, I think he was. Because he's only just resurfaced, isn't he?
Yeah, so he's dead.
What? Who are we talking about?
I'm talking about... Are you not talking about Mark E. Smith?
No, Matthew Smith.
Oh, okay.
Well, Jet Set Willy, dude.
Man.
That's less surprising.
Ian did have to go around his house and kind of do it in his bedroom, which was really cool. Yeah, because it was he'd sit there and he'd be saying, oh, my Spectrum would crash when my mum turns the kettle on, so I have to program at night.
That is just so him, isn't it? Like, that is brilliant.
What's your favourite shows then, guys, out of that lot? Or...
Yeah,
I think, bad.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I did used to love Bad Influence. And I know everyone's Games Master was technically the better show and it was it was more grown up, but I think there's something about that, you know, the time of day it was on, just getting back from school, just before you had your dinner, and then I think the fact that they also covered computers I found quite good as well, because it wasn't just about games, because I kind of liked it when they did, you know, showing off like new 3D hardware, or you had the Z, was his name Z, the guy that was in America? Yeah. You'd find out what was happening over there. That always seemed like a million miles away, seeing reports from America.
No, it was a good show.
It was a great show.
Yeah, that little data blast thing at the end.
That was great.
A few hints and tips at the end of that.
Record! Press record! Stop!
Oh my God, just record! My video's flickering too much, I can't read it.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's a question. Why do you think those shows just have not survived to the present day?
I asked Ian Lee that very question. He said, the internet, he said, YouTube, there's enough on there already. There's not enough, you know, need for it on the commercial TV, it seems.
Yeah, we had a chat to Ashens once, and he was saying that, you know, they actually, he'd asked about that at some TV production studios, and they'd said they actually viewed video games as being competition for television. Mm. You know, they want you to watch TV. They don't want you to turn the channel off and play games.
I suppose, yeah.
Maybe that's why there's no film review shows on mainstream TV anymore either.
Yeah. Nope. I mean,
that's a good answer. I didn't think of that, yeah. Could be the point.
He's a wise man, Ashens.
Wiser than us, anyway.
He's way wiser than us, yeah.
Well, while we've got you on, Dale, I need to confront you about something. I was listening to your Is Rise of the Robots Really That Bad episode? Are you the only man in the world that likes Rise of the Robots, then?
Oh, mate, I think I am, you know. It's a funny, you know, listeners won't have heard this because they probably won't have heard the episode, but back in, what was it, 93 or 94, I can't remember now, but that Christmas, you know, the Amiga was the mainstay in my life. And Rise of Robots was the thing. It got a pretty good review in that CU Amiga or Amiga Power review. It was about 80-something%, and it just blew my mind. It just, you know, it was 12 floppy disks. I think 13 if you include the install disk, and it played not great. But just seeing that stuff on my, you know, my rubbishy CRT telly, it was amazing. And I don't know if I'd play it so much now, I'll be honest with you, but I'll definitely fight its corner.
I mean, for the Amiga.
For the Amiga. Oh, easy.
For an Amiga, see, beat 'em up.
You can, you can tell Rob didn't have an Amiga growing up.
I mean, if you look at, you know, the Amiga Street Fighter wasn't great. It had those weird body blows. Yeah. Adrian's going to punch me now, but body blows wasn't amazing.
Well, the fight was all right.
Mortal Kombat wasn't good either.
I didn't mind that on the Amiga. I thought it was all right. But yeah.
It's like load disc for finishing moves.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, you know, come on, Amiga. But that's where it kind of fell on its face a little bit, because it was limited to those floppy disks. Well, they were about 700 and something kilobytes of data. So it was completely hamstrung by that. But that's why Street Fighter didn't turn out great. And yeah, Rise of the Robots, mate. Yeah, just if anyone disses it to you, just send it my way.
Well, it had established Rise of the Robots is also a very misogynist game.
It is a tad.
Is it? I can't remember it being.
The supervisor at the end is female, isn't it?
I think the whole plot, the background plot of the game, is that the supervisor gains sentience and decides she's female, then decides to destroy humanity right afterwards.
Wow. Yeah, so
they're basically saying that feminism killed the world. Is that what Rise of the Robots is saying?
I'm not going to put words
in the robot's mouth.
But it looks pretty dodgy.
The kind of hype surrounding that game was insane as well. Like, talking of gaming TV, I remember those monitors that Bad Influence got customized in the Rise of the Robots style and did their whole intro redone for Rise of the Robots. They must have really regretted that.
They did. After they started playing it and realized that one of you had to be Cyborg and you couldn't jump over the other guy, you know, these are, you know, this is where it all kind of fell on its face a little bit.
But what I find really surprising about that is when you kind of say, like, oh, I looked amazing. It's like, because I remember seeing footage of that and just thinking, this does not look like a good game at all. It's
think
like
of the
two
colours,
moves.
Though. I mean, it was on the A1200 AGA version.
Yeah.
So the colours were phenomenal, and just the drawing and everything, the animation of it. The Amiga hadn't done anything. I was playing like stuff like Operation Stealth before that, and stuff like I love Flashback, right? But Flashback graphically compared to Rise of the Robots, just the, you know, the aesthetic of it. Come on.
I'm with you there, because I got it as well that same Christmas. I had the Amiga 600 version, and I do remember the intro, I think the intro was probably like 10 of the 13 discs that it came on, probably. Yeah. But I do remember putting that in and being like, wow. You know, until the game started and it was just an average beat 'em up. But that intro was impressive.
The intro was amazing. We see the little spaceship going in and like Cyborg running through the complex and stuff. I was just,
And don't forget, Dill's Brian May's biggest fan, so that's always a bonus.
Brian May's biggest fan, even though the best tunes in it aren't the ones that he made, but we'll skip past that.
So, why did you guys start the podcast then?
Keith.
It's his fault. And he's not even here to defend himself.
But
so you can make up whatever lies you want about him.
Yes. Keith, well, no.
I think the blog was picking up speed and it seemed to get a bit of traction. People seemed to like our writing and stuff and interviews. And Keith just thought, he said one day, why don't you just do a podcast and talk about this stuff and meet up and have a few beers? And do you know what? It's an excuse to meet up with friends, have a couple of cheeky beers and just have a little bit of a laugh, really. We're not experts. I think we use Wikipedia a bit too much, don't we?
We do use Wikipedia an awful lot. But Keith will admit that prior to that, we didn't see him anywhere near as regularly.
Yeah.
Like, we used to meet up, you know, we've been friends for so long, we used to be maybe all together maybe every 2-3 months or something, but now it's like every month, regardless of what we're doing, we'll meet up and do this. So it's good for that, and we've just grown into it. I don't, you know, we're not natural speakers. We just like chatting about gaming and us hanging out.
It used to be the three of you, and then I think it started when I was like, I live in Australia, and I kind of listened to a couple of episodes and just thought, man, I should horn in on this.
Rob was like, let me in, and we were like, oh, Rob, we have to change the intro now, but yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Just like Scooby and Scrappy do all over again.
It was, yeah, Scrappy.
Well, that's what I kind of love about doing this one, is the fact that, you know, I see Joe and Dan every single week, and it's a good reason to actually get together. But I was wondering, what are your favourite episodes?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'll tell you what, talking to Tommy Tallarico, not an episode with the other guys, truthfully. sorry, Dylan, Rob.
Ones that don't include us. Yeah.
But Tommy Tallarico is great. And I don't know if you guys have spoken to him, but he's well worth getting on the show.
We're trying, but I think he's in television busy at the moment.
All right. But he was awesome. So open, and just some of these stories are absolutely incredible. So I love that episode. Also, I always talk about the Jaguar. So if there's any excuse to talk about Jaguar games, it annoys a certain people in this room a little bit. But that's what, you know, I like my Jaguar episodes a little bit as well.
For me, I think Sword Quest, like just a game I'd literally never heard of before. Then Adrian kind of told the entire story of Sword Quest, this obscure Atari like game from the early 80s, and just an amazing story, I think, in kind of however which way you look at it. Never heard it before, and just the way it unfolded, I loved actually just being in the room for that.
My favorite one was the one I presented on Dino Crisis, because it was the first one where I really started enjoying podcasting. And the guys hadn't heard of Dino Crisis 3, so it was quite, you know, it was quite fun breaking it to them that it was essentially dinosaurs in space. And we had a good, we had a good laugh with that one. I think that's probably my favorite one.
Like dinosaurs. I probably said that at the time.
Dinosaurs, yeah. Well, you know, we like recycling our jokes.
We're mainly positive. We don't like to have a go at games often. We have a few in the past, but we also often
unless
talk...
It's Bubsy.
Unless it's Bubsy.
Then get it.
We often like to do podcasts where we're quite positive and resonates with our childhood and what we did. And I always tell silly stories about what it, you know, growing up and so forth. And then, you know, it's just an excuse to talk rubbish, really, and everyone having a good laugh.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, like, there's kind of definitely a dynamic in there. Like, you're the storyteller, I think. Dylan's more like kind of the socializer. Like, you're kind of bringing the kind of pub questions to the room. I don't know if that's because they require less prep. But,
yes, it is. I'm really lazy when it comes to prep. I'm like, busted.
Like, Keith is kind of the collector. Like, he's, I think for him, it's really kind of, he gets to kind of, he's an adult now. He gets to do what we all wanted to do at that age and like buy all these systems and get into that kind of stuff.
Just don't tell his missus how much he's spending on these consoles.
No.
Although she might be listening to this.
Yeah, and I guess for me, like, I used to be heavily into it. I'll be honest, I'm not a massive gamer these days. But for me, I think it's just so interesting to kind of look at where that stuff was. I guess I'm more of the outsider. And so you guys can kind of tell me about this and maybe I'll bring in a different perspective.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, that mixture of different opinions is what makes it work.
Yeah. I know you guys, you touched on collecting, and you've done some really interesting shows about different systems and stuff. And I know, Dylan, Rob, you picked up a Jaguar CD and a Mega CD a while back you were talking about too.
Yeah,
I mean, is
yeah.
it kind of this, are you on a bit of a mission to kind of maybe rediscover things that you didn't play first time around? Or?
Oh, definitely.
Oh, man, the
definitely.
Jag CD. not cheap.
Yeah, I've got one.
I've seen some pictures of yours.
Yeah, we've seen yours.
You play music, don't you, quite often? It's really, really excellent, isn't it, doing that?
Yeah, I stick it on for a picture, then I'm like, I don't know where the laser out and turn it off.
Oh, I know. When I turn it on, I'm always a bit scared. I've had a Jaguar for years. I think my mum, I got it just after the lifespan of the Jaguar. I think I got it cheap in a games shop, electronics boutique, I think. And I played it quite a lot, but it's only recently, the last 2-3 years. And I thought, there's something missing. I need to get the Jag CD. It did cost a bit of an arm and a leg, but it just seems like I had to get it. I love that thing.
There is more scope for getting a Jag CD these days because people are publishing sort of homebrew stuff to the CD. You can get Atari ST compilation discs and stuff. I think they work on the Jag CD. So I think I thought that was a decent purchase. But I think the Mega CD might be the greatest thing that I own. I pretty much have every console now in some kind of guise, but the Mega CD, just knowing that it's in my house, just the way, you know, just listening to it load CDs and the way it boots up, and it's just everything about it is just...
What are we actually still missing in terms of like machines?
Well, between the lot of us.
Probably the CDI that Dan was talking about.
Yeah, CDI.
You're not missing much, just.
I tell you what, like, I've always been
laser active.
CD32, the Amiga CD32, something I've always... That's another itch I need to scratch.
Yeah, I've got two of them. Ravi's got one.
Yeah. Oh, is he?
Yeah. Ravi's is signed.
Ravi.
I collect games for it, and they're getting amazingly expensive. Yeah. And a lot of the retro stuff is. Do you think kind of it's reaching a peak, guys?
I don't know, because we did a sort of has the bubble burst on that. We don't really know about collecting, because people are really taking the mickey now. Even high street retailers who shall not be named are way overpricing stuff, and people will get sick of it at some point.
Oh, I don't know if I can agree with that. Like, as someone who used to
What with the price hikes? Or...
Yeah, as someone who used to work in a secondhand record store, I think once something kind of attains that collector's kind of cachet, it doesn't go down, because you're not going to get any more of them. They aren't going to be kind of... You're not going to get new vintage machines. Mm. I think, like, once they reach a certain point, they become actual investments, and that people start speculating, and at that point, you have people coming in who maybe aren't buying because they love it. They're buying because they are investments.
It's a weird kind of loop at the moment, because I can see people listing stuff on eBay at very high prices. Mm. One of the items will then sell, and then the retailers will look at it and go, oh, we need to put £10 on top of that. And it just keeps driving the whole price of everything up.
Economics would say the bubble would burst eventually, but I think we might see more sort of mini consoles coming out. And I don't think customers are mugs, though. I think certain mini consoles have done really well, but the PlayStation Mini wasn't done particularly well, I don't think. So I think video game companies, I'm all up for those kind of retro systems, but they've got to be very careful how they do it. Let's hope the Mega Drive Mini does well, eh?
Yeah, I think that was a lesson to Sony, probably. I think they thought they could just put any old crap out and people would buy it. Yeah.
Well, they rushed it, didn't they? I think just in time for Christmas. But the PlayStation Classic is a funny one, because now people are realizing they can hack it, well, soft mod it, and they can get a full library on there and enjoy it that way, then it does have a purpose now.
And it's a huge price drop as well, isn't it?
£20 on Amazon.
The other day on Amazon, like £15 or something. Yeah. It was like Keith picked up one. I've already got one, but you know, he picked up one for £15. It's a joke, really. And you know, with a flash drive, with one of those 8-bit do wireless. Like Bluetooth card things, you can turn it into a decent console. So you have to buy the other stuff to go with it. But yeah, you can do that. But I don't know. I'm not sure. I totally agree with what Rob says about the collecting thing. I mean, there's a copy of Snatcher on the Mega CD in in aforementioned high street retailer that's been there for about a year now. It's at about £250. Mm. So no one's taken a punt on that, and that is apparently what Snatcher is worth, but no one's bought it. So if that is a measure of anything,
do you think retro is kind of peak then, or do you think we're just kind of riding the wave, or do you think it's going to get bigger? Or
I really hope not, because we want to take things up a level. Yeah. So we don't want to, we want to put out more content there. We think, you know, retro. Why can't retro gaming be a seven day of the week kind of thing? So we're hoping it's not. And Rob made a point in that podcast that we mentioned earlier that something will always be retro.
Mm.
There will always be a market for something that, you know, that gives people that feeling of nostalgia.
Yeah, I think, like, maybe a thing with kind of gaming is now that it has reached that level of, like, an actual kind of recognized art form. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's only going to get bigger in terms of collectibles. I think the difference between gaming and the, well, it's not really a difference, but the thing is, it's like you look at kind of a rare record, like the first edition, say, Sgt. Pepper's. Like, that's, you're going to keep going up in price because there's only so many there. But you can always listen to Sgt. Pepper's on CD, like on Spotify or whatever. Yep. You're always going to have access to it, and that's something that's, I think, going to come in. It's just the actual kind of hard stuff is going to keep on appreciating in price.
Yeah.
Well, I think the physical software is being phased out, isn't it? So I've got a Switch console, and, you know, the amount of, you can buy the games in the eShop if you want, you know, on the Nintendo shop if you want to. So I think the next generation of consoles, there'll be no physical, well, I might be wrong here, but not much physical software.
Well, Stadia, isn't it?
Yeah.
And all that Stadia. Stuff.
So maybe retro, there'll be a line drawn. So in 20 years' time, people might go, oh, remember we used to buy cartridges and, you know, Switch cartridges? that could, in a way, it almost draws a line in the collecting area. It might actually make it bigger in a weird way.
Thing is, though, like, I mean, looking back, you could have probably predicted this to some extent, because,
yeah,
I mean, look at back in the 90s when we were kind of first getting into gaming, even then, the whole big Beanie Baby craze.
Yeah.
Like that, you know, you could already kind of see toys going for big, like, starting to go for big money. Even, like, back then, like, vintage Happy Meal stuff, like, those toys are going for a good amount of money. And now, man, those have become hugely collectible.
Mm.
I just don't have the space to collect, guys, I'll be honest with you. I'm trying to get rid of my optical media, and I just have, you know, a few cartridges. I've, you know, the consoles, but I look at stuff like Flash Solutions and, you know, that and EverDrives. You know, that's kind of how I want to play stuff these days.
I just pre-ordered the Atari Jaguar one today. It was like 140 quid, I think.
Oh, did you get it?
Yeah,
oh.
I'm in there.
I think as well, retro gaming's a much better investment than Beanie Babies, because they've completely hit the floor.
I just love seeing, Dylan says he doesn't really want to collect the games, but when I wake up in the morning drinking my coffee, I just look over, see my Jaguar game collection. It just makes me happy. look at my Jag CD, and just the endorphins. It's absolutely incredible, actually. I don't even have to play the things.
Well, guys, as long as retro's here, I mean, I know we'll be covering it and you guys will as well. Arcade Attack is your podcast. I'm going to put a link in our show notes. Everyone needs to check you guys out. What's coming up on the show? You got anything exciting in the pipeline?
Well, we've got a lot of stuff, haven't we? We've got, Rob mentioned earlier, Mortal Kombat. We've got a Syndicate episode.
We are going to talk about 3DO, I think.
3DO, yeah, we've got that. Adrian's just had a chat with Stu Cambridge.
Yep.
So yeah, we've got, yeah, no, there's lots of nice things coming up.
Have I missed anything? Electronic Arts stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah, because I've just had a little rant at Electronic Arts about things fiscal. But we sort of flipped that, and we've done a bit of an EA tribute podcast as well, just so that they don't completely ignore us at EGX and stuff. So.
Yeah, Adrian was like, we must wipe EA off the earth and eliminate all traces of this seed.
Dan, Rabbi, you got to understand, I had a few beers in me. I was talking about how EA destroyed Westwood Studios and Bullfrog. I was a bit grumpy, and it just slipped out. I don't really mean it.
Was this pre-Command & Conquer announcement of the new one?
Oh, I know. I mean, I'm looking forward to that, actually, the remakes. I think they could be really good, to be fair.
Yeah. Well, guys, your show's at arcadeattack.co.uk. People got to check the show out. And we've really enjoyed doing this, our first crossover episode. It's been fun. We should definitely do this again, guys.
Oh, 100%.
Well, we're going to have you guys on our show if you're up
great.
For it.
Oh, absolutely. That's
excellent.
Down the line.
Yeah, brilliant.
No, it's been a great laugh. Thank you so much. Really enjoyed it, Dan.
Yeah, no,
and Robbie,
so
thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us. Yeah, listeners, it's really up to you if you really want to check us out.
Don't sound too desperate.
I don't know if we've done ourselves any favours, but yeah, come our way. And I'll leave Rob to say our final word.
Why me?
That's the final word. Yeah. Why me?
Well, guys, keep up the good work with the show. It's been amazing talking to you and reminiscing with you. Thanks for coming up.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you so much.
All the best.
Cheers.